Carmen is a masterpiece in every sense of the word, one of those rare creations which expresses the efforts of a whole musical epic. These are not my words, or the words of a historian or musicologist. These are the words of Tchaikovsky, upon hearing Carmen for the very first time. Hello, this is Jack Zimmerman, longtime subscriber relations manager at Lyric Opera of Chicago. I'm now retired, but not retired from thinking about opera. Today I'd like to talk to you about Georges Bizet and that wonderful creation of his that premiered in 1875, Carmen. During my many years at Lyric Opera, it became apparent to me that when it comes to genuine crowd pleasers, there are five operas that surpass all others. For that reason, every opera company includes at least one of them in every season. Three are by Puccini, Bohème, Butterfly, and Tosca. One is by Verdi, Traviata, and one is by Bizet, Carmen. We all know that music, but before we get into it, I'd first like to talk about Bizet and his life and times. If you were an opera composer in the 19th century and you wanted to achieve great fame and wealth, Paris was the place to be. It was certainly a musical capital, a European cultural center if there ever was one. The city attracted some of the greatest musical minds of the time. Many French composers, Gounod, Massenet, and Berlioz, all had a strong presence. The Italians were there as well. Rossini lived in Paris for many years. Donizetti spent time there, and so did Verdi. And even Wagner made several attempts to make Paris his home. Bizet was born in Paris, and except for a few years of studying abroad, he spent all of his short life there. What better place to be if you earned a living composing operas? Paris of the 19th century saw the transformation of opera. In the first half of the century, with the decline of royal patronage, a new kind of opera was necessary, something that would please the masses, not just the privileged few. Opera now had to appeal to a much broader audience, a burgeoning middle class that was looking for excitement and entertainment. French grand opera filled that need. It was chock full of spectacle as well as memorable music. French operas of the time, like those of Meyerbeer, were five-act extravaganzas that involved stirring historical subjects, large casts, gigantic choruses, lavish scenery, and maybe even pyrotechnics. Oh, and I almost forgot ballet. In other words, lots of eye candy and a good deal of appealing music. But art is always in flux, and Bizet's Carmen, which premiered in 1875, demonstrated a turning away from that formula. Carmen was really different from all that French grand opera. There's no sentimental plot, no mythology, there are no Nibelungen or gods of any kind with magical powers. Carmen is as good an example of realism as you'll find, and the music. All those Spanish rhythms and tunes have incredible appeal, and on top of that, it's all so perfectly orchestrated. The story itself is quite dramatic. Set in southern Spain, it chronicles the downfall of Don José, a very naive soldier who is seduced by the sexually smoldering gypsy woman. Don José abandons his childhood sweetheart and his army career, and slowly becomes more obsessed with the fickle gypsy temptress. She's more like Alban Berg's Lulu than the standard heroines of 19th century operas. Eventually, José loses out to the bullfighter Escamillo. He then kills Carmen in a jealous rage. It was the old, if I can't have her, nobody can. The gritty depictions of everyday life, Carmen's immorality, and her onstage death were deeply troubling for the audience of Bizet's time. So troubling that most everyone in its opening night audience, and this includes the critics, did not see Carmen as a major masterpiece. It was so far afield from what the opera-goers of Paris had expected that the audience offered only tepid applause. And most left the opera house puzzled and perplexed. Bizet was convinced he had produced a dud. He walked the streets of Paris silent and downcast. But one reviewer got it. This is what he wrote. Georges Bizet is one of those ambitious men for whom music must be, even in the theater, not an entertainment, a way of spending an evening, but a divine language expressing the anguish, the folly, the celestial aspirations of the being who is a wanderer here below. Instead of those pretty sky blue and pretty pink puppets who were the joy of our fathers, he has tried to show real men and real women dazzled and tortured by passion, whose torment, jealousy, and mad infatuation are interpreted to us by the orchestra turned creator and poet. So wrote the poet Théodore de Bonneville in an article in March 1875. Only 2 months later, in the early hours of June 3rd, 36-year-old Georges Bizet died of a heart attack. He would not see his Carmen become one of the most popular operas of all time. Among his pallbearers was Charles Gounod. Shortly before his death, Bizet signed a contract for a production of Carmen by the Vienna Court Opera. It was first staged there in October of 1875. There were some deviations from Bizet's original format. Remember, he had died 6 months before. Originally, Carmen had spoken dialogue, which for Vienna was changed to recitative. But the Vienna production was a stunning success. The public embraced it. Johannes Brahms, a German composer who wrote not a single opera, saw it 20 times. He said that he would have gone to the ends of the earth to embrace Bizet. Those recitatives stayed, and for many years that was the way the opera was performed. Recently, though, there's been a move to return to the original spoken dialogue. That's the version lyric patrons will be hearing this opera season. The Vienna performances in October of 1875 marked the beginning of the world's enthusiasm for the work. In 1884, Carmen was given its first Metropolitan Opera performance. By 2011, the Met had performed it 1,000 times. It's a popular opera and popular in many different languages. The Toreador's song from Act II is one of the best-known tunes in all opera. In 1943, Oscar Hammerstein set the Carmen story on a southern military base. He renamed it Carmen Jones. Otto Preminger made it into a movie in 1954. It starred Dorothy Dandridge as Carmen Jones and Harry Belafonte as Joe. And there's been thousands of pop culture uses of Bizet's music. Countless television commercials selling everything from pasta sauce to electric razors. And Hollywood didn't mind borrowing a bit of Carmen for their soundtracks. The 1976 baseball film, The Bad News Bears, used Carmen throughout. They choreographed the hapless playing of the baseball team with Bizet's music. It was certainly effective. Bizet's opera Carmen is a cultural landmark. It's significant both inside and outside the opera house. Of course, all this began in Paris on October 25, 1838, with the birth of Georges Bizet. His father, Adolphe, had been a hairdresser and a wig maker, but one day Adolphe decided to teach singing. Amazingly, he became successful at it despite the fact that he had little formal training. The senior Bizet composed a few works and even got one of his songs published. Bizet's mother was an accomplished pianist, and early on, young George showed an aptitude for music. He liked listening to his father's voice lessons and at a very early age could sing difficult songs from memory. And this is the most remarkable part. He could analyze complex harmonies. Bizet grew up in a state of cultivated poverty. Early on, Bizet had great determination to earn money from his works. He began studying at the Paris Conservatory even though he was only 9 years old. The minimum entry age was 10, but Bizet was so impressive in demonstrating his musical abilities that the age requirement was waived. 6 months after his admittance, he won first prize in solfège, or sight singing. He studied a variety of musical subjects, counterpoint, fugue, of course piano, and in his years at the conservatory he made friends with such musicians as Gounod and Saint-Saëns. In 1852, he won the conservatory's first prize in piano. Bizet got into composition class, and two of his songs were published in 1854. In 1855, he wrote an overture for large orchestra. Soon after his 17th birthday, he wrote his famous Symphony in C, a jewel of a work that was lost for many years. It was rediscovered in 1933. It's classically inspired, and it has appeared on the repertoire lists of most orchestras. It's still widely programmed today. In 1856, Bizet competed for the prestigious Prix de Rome. His entry was not successful, but in 1857 it was. Bizet received a financial grant for 5 years, the first two to be spent in Rome, the third in Germany, and the final two in Paris. Bizet requested to skip his year in Germany and instead stay a third year in Italy. His request was granted. He returned to Paris financially secure, at least temporarily, with 2 years of his grant money remaining. In March of 1861, he attended the Paris premiere of Wagner's opera Tannhäuser. Of course, there were riots. This was Paris. But the performance caused Bizet to revise his opinion of Wagner's music, which until now he had thought to be over-the-top eccentric. He now felt that Wagner was, and these are his words, above and beyond all living composers. French critics often accused Bizet of Wagnerism. This continued throughout his career. But I don't think many of us ever listened to Carmen and thought, yeah, that sounds a lot like Tristan und Isolde. As a pianist, Bizet had a colossal talent and was adept at the keyboard from early on. There's a story about him attending a dinner party at which Franz Liszt was present. Bizet astonished everybody by flawlessly sight-reading one of Liszt's most recently composed pieces. Liszt called him brilliant. The first performance of the Pearl Fishers came in 1863. Berlioz had much praise for the work, but the public reception was lukewarm. The opera's run ended after 18 performances and was not seen again for another 5 years. Carmen, though, is another story. The opera takes place sometime around 1820 in Spain. Act I opens in a square in Seville. There's a cigarette factory and a guardhouse. Eventually, Carmen enters and sings about love. Love is a rebellious bird. Love is the child of the gypsy. Obviously, she's establishing her character. She throws a flower to Don José. You can see where this is going. Votre sauté, et c'est Jose has a few other things going on in his life. First of all, he's in the army, and he has a girlfriend named Micaela, and a mother who wants him to come home and marry Micaela. Fate steps in here. Carmen attacks a woman with a knife. She's restrained and left alone with Jose. This is when she casts her spell, singing of a night of dancing and passion with an unnamed lover. Jose melts. He's fallen for her. He unties her hands, and as she's taken away, she escapes, and soon enough Jose is arrested for dereliction of duty. No good deed goes unpunished. A month goes by, and Jose is released from his detention. Carmen and some friends are in a tavern when Escamillo, the Toreador, shows up and establishes the fact that he is indeed the alpha male. He does this with one of the most famous songs in all opera.
Votre doce peut vous le rendre, Seigneur, Seigneur, car avec les soldats.
Some smugglers show up and propose a business deal to Carmen and her friends. They want their aid in smuggling contraband. Carmen refuses, and soon Jose arrives. And here is where things really heat up. Carmen does a private dance for him while singing and accompanying herself with castanets. You heard the bugle call in the distance, right? It's summoning Jose, and of course, Jose needs to go. He's still in the army. Carmen makes fun of him. In a gesture intended to show his love for her, Jose produces the flower that she had thrown at him in the square. Carmen doesn't care and demands that he leave with her. Jose, though, is still a soldier and refuses to desert the army. But as he gets ready to leave, his superior officer shows up looking for Carmen. One thing leads to another, and he and Jose fight. Jose is really in deep this time. Because he attacked a superior officer, his only choice of action is to run off with Carmen and the smugglers. Among the many talents and abilities Georges Bizet was blessed with, the greatest was the fact that he was sensible. He wrote beautiful music, but he didn't overwrite it. If he had a good musical idea, he didn't feel the need to club the listener over the head with it. He allowed his music to breathe, to be itself. Here's the beginning of Act Three. It's simple, it's beautiful, and it's Bizet at his most brilliant. Well, that's a welcome break from all this passion. At the beginning of Act Three, José and Carmen throw in with the smugglers. But now, the ever-fickle Carmen has grown bored with José. She tells him he should go back to his mother. Micaela shows up and tries to get José to go back with her. It is in this act that Bizet gives us Micaela's aria, an example of his unique gifts as a melodist and his ability to craft a stunning aria.
Yeah.
We're building towards a climax. Carmen and her friends read one another's fortunes. Things look bleak for Carmen. The cards are not kind. Death is foreseen for her and Jose. Escamillo enters and he makes the mistake of confessing that he too desires Carmen. He and Jose fight, but their fight is broken up by the returning smugglers. As Escamillo leaves, he invites everyone to his next bullfight in Seville. Jose is finally talked into returning home with Micaela, but he only does this upon learning that his mother is dying. He vows to return. In the distance, Escamillo can be heard singing the Toreador song. Act 4 is short and succinct. At the bullfight, Carmen sees Jose, and the two sing a duet in which Jose keeps repeating that he loves Carmen, and Carmen keeps telling him it's over. Here's the end of it, with Jose singing, "Don't leave me, oh my Carmen, ah, remember the past. We loved each other not long ago, ah, don't leave me." To which Carmen replies, "Never will Carmen give in. Free she was born, and free she shall die." The course is set. The crowd watching the bullfight sings, "Viva, viva, this fight is beautiful," as they watch the bull stuck in the heart and killed. Things deteriorate even further. Jose demands that Carmen follow him. She removes a ring from her finger that Jose had given her, and she throws it at him. Jose tells her that she is damned and stabs her. He then throws himself on her dead body. Here's the final minute. While the opera is titled Carmen, it is Jose who is the central figure. It is his gradual deterioration that is so interesting to watch, and Bizet, through his music, does a good job of portraying his decline. He starts out as a regular guy, a conscientious soldier, and heads downhill act by act. He deserts the army, associates with criminals, and by the end of the opera, he stabs to death the woman he loves. Except by the end of the opera, it was more obsession than love. In the beginning, he was a simple man, someday to marry Micaela, a woman who exudes wholesomeness, a woman who represents home and hearth and all those things that a soldier yearns for. Plus, Micaela is known to Jose's mother. It would have all been so easy if he hadn't encountered Carmen. But he did. By the end of Act 2, his emotions are out of control. And in Act 3, things become very dark as he deals with the forces of jealousy and his own despair. At the end of the opera, he's unable to think of anything other than Carmen. She completely occupies his mind. While this causes him great pain and suffering, the threat of losing her to another man causes him even more. He kills her because, well, that's what people who are out of alternatives do. Carmen, though, was a new breed of opera heroine. She didn't depend on men, and she wasn't the pure and innocent woman that so many opera heroines were. She was dangerous in a very attractive, sexy way. Of course José would be fascinated by her. And then he would be hopelessly in love with her. And then, well, you know the rest. The recorded examples used in this commentary were from the EMI Classics recording with Grace Bunbury, Mirella Freni, and John Vickers, and the chorus and orchestra of the National Opera Theater of Paris, conducted by Raphael Frubeck de Burgos.